Sure, you're good to go.
I think I call the Denver Community Energy meeting of Thursday, November 20, 2025 to order. If you have a roll call, please.
City of Palm Desert,
Present.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
Chair, you have a floor.
Okay. Do we have any agenda modifications?
No, Chair.
And any now public comment? This person two opportunities to address the board. Any person wishing to address the Denver Community Energy Board on items appearing on this agenda item. On this agenda, may do so at this time. Please limit comments to 3 minutes. At the discretion of the chair, I can additional public comment time and/or opportunity during the meeting to be granted. Any public comment? Anybody listening?
I'm sure we have not received any.
Okay. Do we have board member or executive director comment?
Very quickly, Chair, thank you. The last meeting, I had a presentation about the PCE preparing to submit an advice letter seeking around $307,000 in funding for the Community Energy Savings Program to the CPC. I just wanted to share that that was submitted last week. We do not expect to get approval from the CPC before the second quarter of next year, and that advice letter is available on the DCE website. I also just want to take a moment to thank the City of Palm Springs and the Police Department for letting me use the really nice meeting space.
Any comments? Okay, now we go to the consent calendar. Is there anything from poll for question? No, but I am going to ask the director to comment on 1B, the UCP. We're going to pull it for comment.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull 6B for on the rate stabilization schedule and ask for comment.
Do you like to vote on 6A first, or do you like me to go ahead and
show? We can vote.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All in favor?
Approved. The 6B is related to a very small adjustment to the rate stabilization schedule. So the Desert Saver rate has always been pegged to be slightly between 0 and 0.1% below the SBE rate. And the rate stabilization schedule as it is currently written, that is pegged to the domestic rate. That's where most UCP customers, that's the most common or of the rate schedule. When we get rate changes from SBE, it's actually a fairly large spreadsheet that involves several steps. Different, it's not just a percentage change by SBE, it's often different changes in different rate schedules, different changes in delivery schedules. And what we have found is that inadvertently that meant that there were occasions where there were Desert Saver rates that were just ever so slightly above SBE. We are changing the rate stabilization schedule. Very clear that all Desert Saver rate schedules will be below SCE, and are working with consultants to take an extra step to make sure of that.
Okay, I think that went out because I noticed that in that letting you know that went out.
Yeah.
So, but now, for the record, all Desert Saver will always be lower than SCE on everything.
Yeah. There may be a slight time lag, but yes, in general, we will, we have to get those rates, process them, and move them forward. But yes, the joint rate comparison should always show them.
Okay, the time lag is just responding to their changes. Okay. Good. Kevin, all in favor? Aye. Okay. The approved 1B. 6B, sorry. And now, for discussion action, we have 7A, we do have a presentation from 4 from 5 and 11 and 4.
Yes, sir. Happy to be here after another successful audit. And we actually have our Joyce, who's the manager from Davis Farr LLP, who's in their 5th year performing the audit over DC's audit financial statement. So I'll do a few key highlights and pass it over to Joyce so she could give you the results of their testing. Overall, DC earned about $71 million in revenue for the year ending June 30th, 2025. Staff could tell you, and you probably know from this past year, that market volatility included really record high renewable energy costs this past year, as well as really extremely kind of peaking prices for resource adequacy. Fortunately, just last month in October, a favorable kind of break came for DCE when the market price benchmark filing by SCE it helped offset some of these expenses. We have some contracts with SCE and they do forecast filings in the spring, and that's what we booked throughout the year. And then just last month, they get final approval from the CPUC for those costs, and that actually kind of saved the day in a way and helped offset some of those expenses. And that's why DCE ended up with about $1 million more in a kind of bottom line than what the final budget had in it. So that equated to about $4.9 million that increased the net position to about 14% from the previous year. That led ultimately to DCE's fixed charge coverage ratio, which is this metric you're hearing me talk about quite a bit lately, to be at 2.49, which we're actually quite excited about. We were a little worried for the end of the year there if we would even hit the 2.0 mark, but we're excited because that meets some really kind of requirements that S&P was expecting us to meet, S&P being the issuer of DCE's investment grade credit rating. So we're excited to talk with them in the next month or two. Should yield some good news for their rating outlook. I think I've heard it's really hard to get an increase in the rating, so I'm not really expecting that. Of course, they'll decrease you pretty quick because things don't go right, but it should be a good legway for the future year if we do run into some challenges. It's another year of good books in the record. I do want to note, we'll hear in item 7D from Ms. McNeely and the TE folks behind me, the Energy Authority staff will help present on that item, that those market price benchmark costs, you might remember from the budget presentation, are inversely related to the power charge and difference adjustment, which eats into DC's revenue as it goes up. So while it was great news in 2025, it is affecting that power charge and difference adjustment, the PCIA, in 2026, because that went up then, and that's going to eat into the revenue for DCE of this fiscal year that we're in. So all those developments we're still looking at, and Joyce, the manager from Davis Farr, is going to present their testing results, which did result in an unmodified, or as non-CPA accounting people like to say, a clean report. And I can take any questions over the financials now, or when Joyce is done, however you want to do it.
Question now.
Wait. Okay. It's Joyce's show.
Hello.
She's a wizard boss.
Can everybody hear me? It was pretty faint when everyone was talking, so I'm not sure if everyone can hear me.
We can hear you fine.
Oh, great. Awesome. Okay, so my name is Joyce Von D. Amankwa, and I served as the manager on this year's audit. And before my presentation, I want to say a big thank you to Claude, JJ, and the rest of the team who worked so hard behind the scenes to make this year's audit a successful one. We truly appreciate their dedication and effort. It was a very smooth one, so I wanted to remember to say thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So the audit was for the fiscal year 2025. And we issued an unmodified opinion. This is the highest opinion that you could ever think of. And what it means is that in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of Desert Community Energy as of June 30, 2025, and the respective changes in financial position and cash flows for the year are in accordance with accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America. So our audit was in two phases. We had the interim phase, which took place back in July, and the final fieldwork phase, which was in September. We provided the scope, which includes the nature, extent, and timing of the audit through a letter to those charged with governance during the planning phase of the audit. We also considered Desert Community Energy's internal control over financial reporting as a basis for designing the audit procedures, and we performed tests over compliance with laws and regulations as required under governmental auditing standards. Our procedures disclosed no internal control deficiencies or no non-compliance, nor other matters that require to be reported under governmental auditing standards. So we issued the financial statement. We had a letter to those charged with governance, and then we also had the government auditing standards opinion. So our communication to those charged with governance includes the auditor's responsibilities, management responsibilities, the significant risk identified during the audit, and whatever we deemed as a significant estimate. And we had stated in that communication with governance that management is responsible for the financial statements. However, as auditors, our responsibility is to plan, design, and perform the audit to obtain reasonable and not absolute assurance that the financial statements are in accordance with GAAP and that it is free of material misstatements. During the audit, we identified revenues and receivables as a significant risk due to the materiality of the account balances. And we performed necessary procedures such as reviewing Calpine's community energy system controls. And we also ensure that they have good controls. I remember there was a time that we got on a video call with them to go through their SOC report. And we also recalculated revenue amounts using the underlying system reports provided by management. And we also identified allowance for doubtful accounts as a significant risk. This is because we noticed that there is an estimate involved in this. So we evaluated the factors used in developing that allowance for doubtful accounts and determined that they were reasonable. Accounting practices. So in the current year, we noticed that the policies included in the note one of the financial statement had no changes. There were no material changes in the application of them as well. And none of the GASB pronouncements in the current year had any impact on the Desert Community Energy's financial statements. So I will move on to the audit areas. So our audit approach. Our audit approach usually includes substantive testing of all material assets and liabilities by reviewing underlying support or confirming with third parties. Usually for cash, we will have Claude and his team sign a confirmation letter. We send it over to the bank or whichever entity we need to confirm from, and then they give us a letter to confirm whatever is on the books. We do perform analytical procedures over revenues and expenses, and material transactions or accounts are further tested by reviewing the supporting documents. Our overall materiality for the current year was 2% of revenues, and we perform necessary procedures over all accounts or transactions that are over this 2% threshold. And as stated earlier, in the other slide, we identified revenue recognition as a significant risk and performed additional procedures in this area. Audit results. Again, Claude and the entire team were ready for the audit. Their records were organized and the team was super responsive. Every email that went out came back really quick with whatever we needed. So that was a great one. And that made the process pretty smooth. There were no unusual transactions or adjustments. We had no difficulties or disagreement with management. There were no consultations with other accountants. We had no management letter regarding internal control deficiencies, so that's really good. And there were no instances of non-compliance. So we finalized the audit on October 31st, 2025, and then we provided management with the reports on the same date. I believe this is the end of my slide. Thank you.
Noise. Noise.
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yeah, it's just a little faint, but.
We're almost off the hook now. We're at the end of this where it's a receive and file recommendation. Happy to take any questions before we
Okay. So I'm free to go?
One second.
Okay.
We could speak up that way. I would have any specific questions. It's pretty straightforward. I would just say reach out to the provisions and make them up.
Thank you so much. Yes, usually the question is to the auditor, was everybody cooperative and helpful and was an easy process? But you already answered that. So congratulations on the highest rating. So thank you, Joyce. We appreciate the report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce.
Bye.
Yep. A second. All in favor? Passion. Okay, now we're going to phase two of the Access Indian Canyon Renewable Energy Assessment Service. Staff report, please.
One second, Chair.
Oh, yes.
I think the speaker is on.
Good afternoon, Chair and Vice Chair. My
Over.
name is Alvaro Valcaso-Gervins.
Louder.
I'm a new management analyst with CBAG, and I'll be presenting item 7B, phase two of the Access Indian Canyon Renewable Energy Assessment Services.
Is it that one years ago?
You may be familiar with the Access Indian Canyon project. It's located in northern Palm Springs, and it includes, well, it includes the construction of two bridges over the Whitewater River, transportation path connected to the Amtrak station on Palm Springs Station Road, then Indian Canyon to Sunrise Parkway, will connect to the city link. There will be a wildlife undercrossing and a mitigation barrier for blowing sand. This project was mostly funded by a $50 million grant by the California Transportation Commission. And while staff was preparing the application, they identified the opportunity to include a renewable energy component, thus DCE's involvement. In August 2024, staff issued an RFP for a feasibility study for the inclusion of the renewable energy component. And also, they split the scope into two phases, phase one being a more high-level assessment, and then phase two being a more in-depth analysis. The board awarded the contract to Gearbit Analytics. They provided a final report May of this year, which confirmed that there were feasible options for the inclusion of renewable energy to the project. While the solar carport and walkway were being unfeasible for our first ideas, the report determined that the installation of renewable energy in that yellow triangle there, which Palm Springs Palm parcel by the Amtrak station was favorable. The report determined that battery, solar field, or wind were feasible options to be installed in that parcel. In September, staff issued a new RFP for phase two for a more in-depth technical and economic analysis. And to get recommendations for a possible development. The evaluation panel recommended the team of Circle and Hot Purple Energy to be selected for phase two due to their local presence and expertise, strong technical background, and cost-effective delivery. The proposed amount is not to exceed $87,520, which is included in the fiscal year 25-26 budget. And if approved, the work will begin next month and conclude by April 2026. And with that, staff recommends the executive director be authorized to execute a contract with the team of Circle and Hot Purple Energy team for phase two.
Any questions? Okay. So you went out to the RFP just to the first two, is that correct?
Yeah, so the original RFP, there were three respondents, and when there were discussions with the two finalists, that's when it was decided to split it into two phases. So each of those finalists to prepare a phase one submit on, so we went back to them for the phase two submit to think of any about it was so strong.
And so this will give you in-depth analysis for how you vote for
and I guess we're achieving some sort of a funding for scale, but to this no form of even to acknowledge it.
Well, we actually picked a different finalist for the phase two. They were differing, you know, comparative to the scale, but it the end combined, I think we were coming in lower than the original budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All questions. Okay, it's 7C, prepaid bond financial overview and setup for initial services.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair Bernstein. Vice Chair being here. This is a presentation I'd say we've been wanting to do for a couple of years now, at least on the staff side, since. That's me, sorry. These deals have been going on in the CCA space since 2021. And, you know, we always hear rumors around or actual things happening. Who the deals will see in the space shortly. But for a while, we thought DCE is too small, meaning that the resources we have to put into a deal to get some kind of discount wasn't enough. But that's actually the case. We are too small to do it. But luckily, through work with Lisa and myself, we found a partner from another smaller CCA who's in a similar position. That's a Redwood Coast Energy Authority out of Humboldt County. We decided with your blessing to combine our energy resources and be participants in this type of transaction together. It would be a first joint participant transaction for our two agencies, but not uncommon in the space. There's been one done to other CCAs before. And in fact, Tyler Noble, who we have on the line here, who we're hoping you'll approve to be our fiduciary advisor in this, he was just doing a transaction he told me was the 86 participants or something like that. So it's quite common back east in the gas kind of prepaid space, relatively new in the CCA space. So I just want to give you a quick overview of the prepaids, touch on the need to get an advisor, and then maybe look at another couple next steps. And really the first step of that, as I mentioned, is selecting that fiduciary advisor to guide us on what all we can put into this deal and how the technicalities are going to work, because we certainly are no experts in that. And again, Tyler is on the line. We'll bring them in if there's any questions along the way. So just want to jump in to why do CCAs and other municipalities enter into these green bonds, we'll call them, or prepaid bonds, and that's to cut costs. And we know that when we cut costs, that's going to flow right through to DC's bottom line in this case, in the annual savings, and ultimately to the customer. You heard me talk about the fixed charge coverage ratio earlier, and that's a piece of this. So if we can get that cost that enter that formula down, what does that mean? That means our revenue requirement is going to go down, which means ultimately that's going to benefit DC customers if we're able to do that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few slides. But for once, the IRS plays into our favor. And they actually have a legal mechanism codified into tax law that allows VCE to participate in these as a municipality under their tax code. So that's basically what I want to tell you about the IRS coding, and that if you're curious, it really has to do with the ability to issue bonds that are tax-free to investors. That's kind of a big piece you're going to hear me talk about a little bit later, because that really creates arbitrage, which is kind of this elusive financial term. If you're a finance person, you know arbitrage means kind of risk-free profit. So I know it sounds too good to be true, and we'll get into that too as well. So that's kind of how these mechanisms work. And just want to go over a little bit of the market. CCAs, like I said, have been doing this since 2021. And actually, Tyler Noble, who's on the call, the proposed fiduciary advisor, he helped start these products in the CCA space in California. Recently, there was about $24 billion of prepaid bonds that have been issued by the CCAs in over 25 deals. And that's annual savings of about $150 million a year. Up here is just some kind of taglines that we saw headlines across the area that we operate in, what some green bonds have yielded in total savings for those issuances. And at the bottom, you can see, depending on market conditions, those savings can range from 8 to 10%, kind of what we're quoting in the staff report. But even more than that, in fact, Tyler Noble, who we're asking you to approve today, he recently was awarded, his client, the Clean Power Alliance of California, the largest CCA, they were awarded an award for the bond Green Bond Build of the Year by the bond buyer, Trade Publication Magazine, and they had savings, I believe, over 14% that Tyler helped them achieve. So we're really looking forward to that. For DCE, we're not quite exactly sure yet, because we really need Tyler's help to tell us what we can put into this deal with our energy portfolio. We know all the wind fleet that we have through Terrigen as the developers, definitely going to be a part of this. And we're hoping there's some other contracts that can be as well. It really depends on the timing of when those come online. And in addition, we have this variable allocation product that we know other CCAs have put into this. It's just a little finagling of what we have to do to get there. That's a contract we have with Southern California Edison. We might have to sell that off and do some mechanics there. But other CCAs have done that. The goal is to get as much as we can, though. So if we can get all those, we could probably save more than $1 million annually. If we can't get everything we think, then maybe it's $600,000 annually. But I hope you'd agree with me that some savings to a certain degree is better than none at all. So that's really what we're looking for here. Any questions so far?
Just to clarify, the 800K, 1 million, and 8% savings.
Depending, that's one variable, right? Which we don't know what that is. This is basically the 800 saying if we can get $10 million annually into this, at 8%, that'd be 800,000. That's right.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
But you said it might be only 600,000.
Well, if we aren't able to work out some bridge products for a resource we have been coming online in a few years, then we might only have 7.5 million that we can put in now. I think 8% of that's closer to 600,000, 10% of that's 750,000. And if we can get everything in, we're looking at $200 million. So it could far exceed a million. So if we get the blessing to get Tyler in here, he'd really help us come back to you, because we're going to be coming back a lot with different pieces of this. You'll have a much clearer picture once we get that financial advisor in.
And what's the risk of building something like a revenue?
With the other CCA, maybe that's a good question for Tyler.
The very first CCA prepay agreement was a joint venture, at least with Mindful Energy, and it was now known as AVA. And there's no reason that other joint ventures haven't happened, because besides just size, all the other participants were sort of met that threshold to make it make sense for them to do it on their own. As Claude mentioned, the a lot of municipalities across the country do this for natural gas, and they have 50, 100 other ventures. But we don't view that as a risk.
Because they couldn't do it without us.
Right.
So it's really that synergy of both of us working together that this is going to happen. So any kind of agreement not to move forward would be a joint.
And so that I understand makes sense to do a joint, but this particular one, does it, you know, there's nothing, there's a question about that.
About their, no, they're a standing CCA. They got an unmodified cleaning report issued even before ours. So they're very, you know, on top of everything as well. Yeah, so they have good financials. Well, we don't technically have an agreement with them. It's all going to be through
the it's a JPA.
They are a JPA.
Oh, I thought we were. I thought we were doing the JPA.
We'll have to join the JPA called Triple CFA, which was created by other CCAs. So we're both going to have to be members of that new JPA, who's technically going to issue these bonds, which I'll get to in a sec.
All right.
No problem. Let's see if I can. Something's just sticky. So I have a couple of slides that are going to be really important for us to learn here. So this is going to be maybe a good takeaway. So it's called a rebus. If you're familiar with that, it's like some pictures that tell you a word. So we got a little rebus puzzle for you. So that is a knot, right? You see, that's a knot. Okay. So these bonds are not, any guesses?
Books.
On the books. That's right. They're not on DC's books. So that's a really a great thing. So that can be a liability to DCE. And that another piece of this is that they are
non-bred.
They're non-recourse. So they're non-recourse. And what that non-recourse means, it's a golf course, right? Palm Springs golf course. So what does that really mean? It means that third parties can't come after DC. And if there was an early termination of the prepays, DC is only paid for energy that it receives. And as I was mentioning, if there was an early termination, then third parties go after the bank, like they did in 29 or whenever this picture was from, and its financial guarantors. So in the worst case scenario, in the event, the unlikely event of the termination of this prepay, everything actually beautifully returns to the status quo, which is what we have now. It's represented on the screen. We pay for power at a fixed price to a PPA seller, in this case, Terrigen, as you know, and we receive megawatt hours and we receive renewable energy certificates. So everything goes away. It goes back to this, and we lose the discount. It may be some heartache and some staff time. Okay, so that's kind of the starting point too for this transaction, the status quo. Stepping to the next step is that DCE is going to assign those PPAs, like the wind fleet, to an electricity supplier who's to be determined. We're probably going to go out through an RFP and get that third party. And those assigned PPAs are going to then they're going to deliver the assigned energy to the bond issuer, who's that JPA that we were talking about a few seconds ago that's made up, and DCE will become a member of it. And that they're going to get the energy, and then the electricity supplier is going to get an upfront payment. So a lot of this is really technical. There's a few key things we want to take away, though, and we're coming up to that stuff soon. So the triple CFA is going to deliver the energy to DCE, and then DCE is going to pay a discounted price for that. And how is that going to happen, you're thinking? Where's this discount coming from? Well, it's because that prepay issuer that we're going to be a member of is going to issue tax-exempt bonds for that upfront prepayment we talked about earlier to that electricity supplier. So we start to see the picture a little bit. The debt service on those bonds to the bondholders is going to be payable from the discounted price that DC pays Triple CFA, who issues the bonds for us. That's why they're not on our books. So just taking a little bit further, there's going to be this a funding recipient that comes into play, probably a special purpose entity created by the supplier, who's probably going to be a bank. They're going to loan the prepayment to this kind of new funding recipient, and that funding recipient's going to pay the assigned price to the PPA seller. That original fixed price that we pay right now is what they're going to be paying to the PPA seller. So kind of putting it all together, that assigned price of the PPA is at the taxable corporate rate, whereas we're paying the debt service payments on those taxes at municipal bond rates. So that's really the key how all this works, is the difference between the taxable corporate rate and the taxes at municipal rate. That's where the discount comes from, and that's what we can think of as the spread. So that's going to be the jelly that we get. So just remember the corporate bonds.
It's like an intro.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to have it with the spread across because we were just starting this deal. We got to work spread. So we're actually going to be waiting to spread that jelly until the market's right. That's typically going to be kind of between the 10-year treasury and the muni bond market. So we're going to get all this transaction prepped in 7 more meetings from now. And we're going to talk about a lot more. You're going to have a lot more education. And at a certain point, we're going to be ready to go with triple CFA, waiting until we can spread that jelly and get the spread. So it will make more sense as we talk about it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Okay, good.
Is there a minimum that we're shooting or do we know that?
A minimum in this? Well, I think it seems like the typical advice not to do less than 80% spread.
Okay.
Or that's a discount we can get.
Okay.
And maybe, yeah.
But that can be a decision that the board or direction.
Could be some predetermined. I mean, there's going to be a certain day when they tell us, hey, guys, we need to go to market. And it might not be before a board meeting. But if there's parameters, we would want to hear Tyler talk to us about what would be reasonable to set for them. The market's not what it was, right? Because interest rates are coming down. The 10-year treasury's actually not moving as much as people thought it would. But recent rate cuts, right? Mortgages are also tied to the 10-year treasury. And they haven't kind of dropped like people thought they would when Fed has recently cut interest rates by some basis points. But
yeah, and I think I was just looking for best practice. Like,
yeah.
Is there a best practice?
It seems like 8%. I mean, there is going to be that at a certain point because there's going to be a cost to it, right? You saw some in the staff report and they're going to start adding up. So and those are all contingent, obviously, on the deal closing. But there is a level of diminishing returns probably below that 8%. We understand it right now.
You mentioned that it terminated to go after the bank. So what is the bank like? What is their safety measures? Why do they take this?
Well, their credit rating. That's all based on, I believe, their credit rating. So why do they take it on? Maybe Tyler can answer more to that. As I understand it, they get underwriting fees and other fees through that. They also play more than just one of those boxes in there. So they diversify and they have the underwriting fees, which is probably big business for them, really. Just like, why does a mortgage company do mortgages? Well, they get underwriting fees too. So I think the fees are probably other things that maybe Tyler can add on, if it makes sense to ask him that question now, or maybe
at the end.
At the end, we can bring him in to answer some of these unresolved questions. So going back to the risk, it's just the loss of that discount, the plain bread, and return to status quo like it is right now.
And staff time.
And staff time and heartache, because it's going to be painful if this doesn't happen. But I don't know that there's been many cases where that's been the case. So you're right about that. And your time, too. Here we are.
Yeah. Well, I find it interesting, but you don't know me. Yeah.
Well, it's a good learning experience for all of us.
So what in this case, may have been timing?
As quickly as you all can get comfortable, and RCA's board can get comfortable too. So I think they've done prepaid transactions in a matter of 3 or 4 months, but we're here now in November. We're gonna really get, we have to get legal counsel on to do our project participant counsel. We're gonna have to find tax counsel, bond counsel. So I would say springtime would probably be the earliest realistic time that we'd be able to evaluate if the market's ready, if we're ready for what the market can offer us.
And once we actually do it, saving the media?
That I really don't exactly know, but I believe they would have to be because we're already in the transaction. Bonds have been issued.
I think it would be whatever portion of that year we're working on, that it'd be pretty quick, if not immediate. Hope Tyler's writing all these down to tell him. All right, we're getting it for you.
All right. Well, I mean, that sounds to me.
Yeah, it feels very much, from my perspective, like a lease revenue bond that we would do for the city. The only thing that component that I'm not quite comfortable with or understand yet is what's the collateral for it. And I'm guessing it's the consistent repayment or the obligation. I that's the part that I'm struggling.
Could it be our so we have long term contract for that energy, and so I think that is the.
What's the recourse? Maybe this
we
is
can
great.
Ask him.
Yeah,
that was just the one.
Well, is he on?
I can bring him in if you're done with your slides. I have to stop the share.
Well, are we gonna, I just don't know if we'll remember all the questions. You'll remember your question? Okay, we can just quickly run through the rest of this. So again, RCA, we want to partner with them with your blessing to get economies of scale with that other smaller CCA. We've already been working great with them. Lisa and I have standing meetings we've been going to. What did Lisa say after the last one? That we each bring something different to the table, the four of us that have been talking about it. So I think we're going to have a good dynamic there. And we are asking that you authorize Tom to confirm kind of that split of the deal cost, which are only contingent on the transaction going through. Right now, we're recommending that would be based on the transaction volume. So if we bring $200 million in and they bring $250 million in, it'd be a proportional share of those costs. Kind of jumping to sticky button. Next slide from Erica.
When you say turn
them on your time, over time. So, of the PPAs, I have three. Oh. Now, there's this whole reset period with a special funding recipient that favors us. So, depending on the market, like we're only locking in that percentage savings for the first 7 to 10 years. And then we're going to have to reset and check it. There's interest rate swaps that go into all that. But that's locked in for at least 7 to 10 years up front. And then we have to, well, we're gonna have a totally different portfolio load than two. So it allows us the best size of the market every 10 years, even though we have longer term agreements in place. The advisor talked about Tyler Noble already. The RCEA and us, we jointly went out, and there's basically two players in the space. And one of them actually represents us with S&P right now, but we gave it a hard look. We ended up choosing to go with Tyler for lots of reasons other than just cost. They were came in more competitive, as well as that he did help launch CCCFA in 2021, which we thought was really a key, you know, for him being in this from the very beginning. And he led those award-winning deals with some of the highest savings. And after the transaction closes, we're actually going to be getting this whole financial model. There's going to be quite a decent amount of staff work that's going to happen monthly with these cash flows, and they're all switching up, right? We're getting this from CCCFA and then something else going out the door. So they really arose to the top for us on that. And then finally, just because we don't know when we're going to be meeting again, we wanted to throw in to pre-authorize us to select a project participant council. That's kind of like our other fiduciary in this, who's going to work with us through the deal to be on our side to make sure that we get the best deal possible. And we'll know more about that as we go. Again, Tyler's going to guide us through the negotiations. After we get the project council, they're going to help us negotiate with the bank, who's ultimately that supplier, and the other participants in the transaction. So just want to mention one more time, all these costs are contingent upon the deal closing, and they're going to be paid out of the proceeds too. So that's really cool. And they're going to be split with RCA, which is even more cool. So there are a couple I put in the staff report that if the deal doesn't go through, we're still going to be on the hook for the credit rating and the membership in CCCFA. So we'd have to sort that out in that unlikely event that would happen. So should we take questions before we go to the recommendation?
Thank you, answer my question, Tyler.
Yeah, I will say, as far as what staff is
I wholeheartedly, supportive. These are the two that help staff the most and protect DCTs most. So I don't have a problem with this recommendation. I'd like to understand the vehicle a little bit better. But other than that,
Tyler? I never seen him. Is that Tyler?
Yeah, this is Tyler. Hi, everybody. Yeah, Claude, you did a really nice and an interesting job of an entertaining job of explaining these. I haven't used food before in boxes and arrows.
It's not a schmear. I forgot to do the New York joke. It's a spread.
Yeah, that was really good. Well, first off, I'm going to apologize for the background. I'm actually in a hotel room in Indianapolis. We were having a closing dinner for a prepay that we did in October. It's a gas transaction for Citizens Gas, which is the muni gas utility of Indianapolis. So after I'm done here, I'm heading down to a cocktail party to celebrate a closing. Yeah, and as an introduction, I'm Tyler Noble with Municipal Capital Markets. I actually, even though I'm in Indianapolis right now, I live in Denver. And I've been doing prepay transactions for roughly 26 years and been in the municipal bond industry over 30 years. So I've done over 100 prepaid transactions with a par amount of over 70 billion or so, including two this week. We did one for Black Belt Energy yesterday, sold, and Monday we did a Southeast Energy Authority transaction. The off-taker on the Southeast, that's Long Island Power Authority. So that's a sort of brief resume. Everybody, I think you asked the appropriate questions. And again, one element of, I'll hit the first one, is what is the risk between Redwood and Desert? You don't have risk to each other in this transaction. So the bonds are issued by the Triple CFA, and each of you pay for energy that is delivered. If, for example, Redwood takes energy and does not pay for it, that is not a risk to you. That's a risk of the energy supplier. How that is structured is what they'll do is settle it with a receivable agreement that keeps the transaction going at the Triple CFA. If a participant does not pay their bill, their energy is cut off. So they would be kicked out of the transaction. They go back to status quo as far as their PPAs. It would not affect Desert, in that what the supplying bank would go through a process called a remarketing, and they have the ability to remarket reduced energy to a municipal utility. So it could be you, it could be Clean Power Alliance, MCE, any one of the other big CCAs. It also could be national. You could use municipal utility. They could remarket it to, for example, Long Island Power. So you're not taking risk to each other. And then the other one, there was a question about the collateral, or what are you putting up? Since these bonds are issued at Triple CFA as non-recourse with the golf course fixture, they're not on your balance sheet. They're on the Triple CFA's balance sheet. There's no collateral. Again, the obligation is that if you you pay a discounted price for the energy you receive. If something goes wrong with one of your PPAs, we can use the remarketing provision that I mentioned. It's the same thing that if you have a defaulting participant, you have a PPA that has a problem, we can use remarketing to bridge to the time frame it would take to replace that PPA. So there's a number of elements that we've built into these transactions that can handle problems. So through the remarketing, receivables, purchase agreements, there's a number of things we can do to address problems to keep the transaction going and keep the discount going to the participants. And then the other one is if for any reason we you take a run at this. And yeah, I think there's every reason to believe that we'll get to work on it, have it hopefully ready, sometime in the spring, probably second quarter, as far as getting everybody on board and the structure in place. But if the market's just not there, or something goes wrong and we are unsuccessful, the only downside for you and in Redwood would be your staff time. Yeah, I don't have any fees that I would charge. As far as the only fee I get is paid out of bond proceeds from the triple CFA upon successful execution of the transaction.
Thank you, Tyler. Did that answer all your questions?
Yes.
Okay. The recommendation was on the record, or does it have to go?
There.
There you go. Oh, there you go. Tyler, me?
He's here.
Right here. Anything else for Tyler?
No, but thank you, Tyler.
Thank you.
Recommendation? Okay. Second it? David? Thank you.
Thank you.
Be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Move to 7B, update on the back of the year for the year 2020-2025.
Great. So, our final item is an overview of some of the likely impacts on the 2026 budget. So, they're both positive and negative due to a range of factors that have changed since the board approved the budget in year 25. Well, I've mentioned some of these. We also heard about the prepayment agreement. So, we're going to, the staff report outlines several of the sort of changes in regulatory pricing and procurement. And while the full impact on the budget of these are still being evaluated, we have been able to share a sense of sort of the magnitude and the direction of where these are. And staff do anticipate a need to bring a budget amendment to the board in early 26. So the analysis behind this was been supported by our consultant, the Energy Authority. We have here Jacqueline Carr, who's our California account director, and Chris Weber, portfolio manager. And I wanted to ask them to sort of help us go through some of those high points for this, knowing that we just got, we're coming close to sort of the end of our time, but handing it over to Jacqueline.
All right. When I'm just on the previous item, Redwood Coast Energy Authority is also a TEA client. So we support them in the same way that we support you and whatnot. Great people there, but also, we understand their clients. So this item is meant to be informational primarily in nature, so that when the budget is brought to the February board meeting, or that's the planned board meeting, that you'll have some of your questions already answered about the different moving pieces. We can just discuss numbers at that board meeting rather than kind of going out to the bigger picture. So this is the bigger picture conversation. So first, talking through the power charge and difference adjustment. As the staff report mentions, the power cost, the power charge and difference adjustment, the PCAA, is a charge or fee that is assessed on all CCA customers who pay for the portfolio that was procured by SoCal Edison on their behalf before they departed SoCal Edison and became DCE customers. The PCAA amount changes and is based on a regulatory structure that has been changing as well underneath it, and then is impacted by what is happening in the ballot box. So the kind of very basic, main takeaway is when the portfolio market value, as it is calculated by the regulatory process, goes up, the PCAA fee that is charged to DC customers goes down, and vice versa. So understanding how that portfolio market value is calculated and what's driving it, it's key to understanding what's driving the PCIA up and down. When we think about that portfolio market value, just to look at it again in another way, there's portfolio cost that is fixed, that is determined by the contracts that SoCal Edison signed back before DC launched its PCA. Then there's the portfolio market value. How much do we assess the value of those resources that are in SCE's portfolio, and then that results in the final indifference amount of the PCAA that is assessed to DCE. Within the portfolio market value calculation, there are three components: the energy index, the RPS market price benchmark, and the RA market price benchmark. And this relates to the three main products that BCE needs to buy as a CCA and all load serving in California need to buy. The energy index is meant to capture the historical and to some extent forecasted value of that energy, just the megawatts that this portfolio is creating, putting onto the grid. The RPS market price benchmark calculates the value of the green attributes, if any exist, and many do within that portfolio. So wind resources, solar resources, the value of the RECs of those resources. And then the RA market price benchmark calculates the capacity value of that portfolio, how much capacity is valued on the California grid. RA is a capacity product that all those can buy. Recently, over the summer, as the staff report discusses, the way that the RA market price benchmark is calculated was changed to a large extent. I guess simplified would be the appropriate way to describe it. And the end result is that the value of the RA component of the market price benchmark has gone down significantly following that regulatory change. Because that value has gone down, the overall market portfolio market value has gone down, and therefore the PCA has gone up. We go on to the next slide. This slide shows how the PCA has changed over the years. And you know, the point here is not really to get too tied to the numbers. I believe these are billions of dollars on SoCal Edison of the total PCA revenue requirements. So the total amount that SCE is calculated as we need to have in order to have the portfolio market value equal the cost that they're seeking for these resources. But the main takeaway here on the slide is how dramatically up and down it can go year over year. And this is partially due to underlying changes in how those market price benchmarks are calculated. So regulatory changes over the past 5 years, and also pretty dramatic swings that we've seen in the market dynamics underlying the energy index, the RPS NPV, and the RA NPV. So when you see one of these swings go up or down, that means that you're also seeing a dramatic swing in the PCA fee that is charged to DC customers. So overall, the main takeaway here is just that as the PCA moves, the amount of revenue that is coming into DCE also changes significantly. The PCA is only calculated near the end of the year by SoCal Edison and through that regulatory process. And as the staff report suggests, sometimes SoCal Edison makes errors in their calculations. So we actually had a fall update, and then we had an adjusted fall update when SoCal Edison caught some mistakes in the main. Taking a step back on that market price benchmark, while overall the biggest impact of the market price benchmarks to DCE is on that PCA calculation, and it impacts you in terms of your retail revenues coming in, there's also impacts on the power cost side. So on the power cost side, a number of the contracts that DCE has with SoCal Edison are priced off of the market price benchmark. So a small amount of the RA that DCE receives is based on the RA market price benchmark. So when that went down, that was a net gain to DCE in terms of decreased power costs. Additionally, a relatively significant portion of DCE's RPS portfolio comes via the voluntary allocation from DCE. It's called a voluntary allocation because DCE voluntarily opted to get that allocation. That happened several years ago, I believe, before either of you were on the board. It was a wise decision then. It still remains a wise decision. It's very valuable for DCE's portfolio. And with the decrease in the RPS NBB, there's also a decrease in the power cost. So those are two sort of silver linings, I would say, of the shift in the market. Some other changes that have happened on the regulatory side that are impacting DC's budget is a change in the structure of the midterm reliability MTR regulatory costs. MTR is meant to be a way for the state to have all load-serving entities build new incremental capacity in California or delivering energy to California to help the state meet both its needs to serve load, like have enough resources on the ground to serve the load, and also to build towards that GHG free energy future that we're going after with 90% carbon free by 2035 and 100% by 2045, which is not seeming so far away as it was when it was initially launched. 20 years is really not that far in the scheme of things. So MTR is, the way to get there. However, one of the things that has been challenging with MTR is that there were goals set in terms of when these resources need to come online. It's called midterm because it's supposed to be mid-2020s, they're in the mid-2020s. And due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the developing supply chain issues, as DCE has experienced, a lot of resources have been, either been delayed or have failed to reach commercial operation entirely. In order to help load-serving entities still meet their MTR obligations, the CPUC created a paradigm called MTR bridging contracts, where you could contract with another load-serving entities or merchant suppliers resource that was eligible the MTR for just a few years as a way to bridge to when your eventual resource will come online. DCE utilized that mechanism to meet its regulatory requirements with respect to MTR as we have been waiting for resources to come online that have been delayed. Recently, this fall, the CPUC decided that while the bridging concept, structurally had merit, it was really adding cost to load-serving entities such as DCE without a lot of true value to the grid. You're not actually bringing new resources online, you're just contracting with resources that were already going online. So the commission essentially did away with the whole concept of bridging resources. And so in doing so, eliminated the need for DCE to buy bridge contracts. So that is a value, decrease in the expected power cost. Another item that the staff report discusses is load and the resulting revenue. There is a very, very close correlation between retail load that DCE sees and the revenues that it receives from that load. And this chart is meant to display us a few months of the recent history, July, August, and September, the forecast, and then the actual loads that came in. The stacked bar charts are showing the different segments by rate class, so residential, agricultural, small, medium, and large commercial, industrial, and then street lighting we always include, but it's a tiny sliver there, very minimal at this point for everyone in California. So what you can see here is that the forecast to actuals in July and August forecast was significantly higher than the actuals that came in. And in September, and as of data that we received this week, or sorry, the finalized this week, October as well, we saw a switch where the actuals came in above the forecasted load. There's a lot of different factors in play. Obviously, behavioral changes by DCE customers can play a large role. Folks not turning the AC as high up as they otherwise would in order to save on their electric bill. Also, weather is a huge component of it. And while I know that it was very warm here in the desert over the summer, it was not actually as warm as sort of the normal year, average year would be over at least July and August period. So we're still looking in, DCE staff and TEA staff, into what's happening with the loads because it's critical part to understand and forecast DCE's retail revenues. But the upshot here is that
the retail revenues that came in for the month of July and August were below what was forecasted in the budget, and in September, slightly above the what was forecasted. So no one can control the weather, but we do want to manage the budget for the actual seven. We're likely to need to impact the budget that's already written. Finally, the staff have been looking for different possibilities of ways that we can be more thoughtful in how we're doing procurement in order to reduce costs. And one of the ways that we have thought of a potential cost saver is to really narrow in and focus on the carbon-free attributes that we're buying for this. As both of you know, the goal for the carbon-free rate schedule for all the carbon-free customers is to be at zero GHG intensity. And as you can see from the chart, we have maintained that green line down at zero, which is the exact goal. What we have also done is with, however, just as you saw in the previous chart, we don't know exactly what the actual load will come in at in any given year. And we need to buy carbon-free typically in the first half of the year, and then it'll be delivered in the first half to the middle part of the year. And then we see what actually happened at the end of the year in terms of load. So it's difficult to hit that bullseye perfectly. And because of that, we always do a slight amount of over procurement in order to help ensure that we will, in fact, have that carbon-free rate, truly zero carbon-free. In 2020, we overshot on that procurement. A lot of things were happening in 2020. And so loads were very different than what we had thought. Everything was very different than what we thought was going to happen in 2020 for anyone going into that year. The end net result of that was that because we had excess carbon-free, that excess carbon-free was put towards the Desert Saver product, and the Desert Saver product in that first year of operation was in fact also carbon-free. Since then, the Desert Saver's GHG intensity has varied pretty significantly, generally below the California utility average, 20 degrees or slightly above it, depending on how close in we got on that carbon-free rate and other footprint goals that we've been. The goal of moving forward is rather than using the Desert Saver component as a way to target what we will be doing for the carbon-free rate, we will instead really focus in on what's happening with the loads for that carbon-free rate and attempt to narrow in on that procurement. We expect that this will reduce the procurement cost we can see by about half. Believe this is my last slide. I did talk a lot. I have my colleague here, Chris, who is doing much of the buying of these products on BCE's behalf. So we're glad to answer any questions you have.
Can I just add one thing? The staff report, every quarter we work to bring the first quarter financial reporting. The timing was just a little off. We not have that ready, but it will be available next month. But we did share so that where we were as of September 30th for our net revenues, and it showed that the budget, we've gone from the budgeted amount of 1.1 down to 1.2. We do know that in October it's swung back up to 2.7 in February. That we see some of that going, that could be a part of your quarterly financials. We say all this month we did it with a lot going on, and I think I did help that.
Increase the
So that funding fit, my takeaway there would be one, those things do happen, especially as we get towards this point in the year, and we're not yet, we're closing in on that rate, the final rate for 2026, which is the back half of the fiscal year. Because rates are set on a calendar year basis, but not rate on a fiscal year basis. And then the other takeaway I would say is that, you know, I mentioned a little bit earlier that the SoCal Edison came out with an adjusted fall update after their initial fall update, and they have made some calculation errors. That's a significant driver of that positive value. So that's, yeah, one issue in how the PCA is calculated can notice some things.
You do win an award for most acronyms.
You know, I probably win that award every time I win.
You're going to look up. That's great. Thank you. So I think, you know, at least they know what wins us back. But also in mind, it's not that we have to do the population is too much. Just beside. Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Okay. Are there any public comments on non-agenda items?
No, Chair, I have none.
Okay. Any announcements? Do you have one really fault? Do you have any? No, conference, so we all on control. So we put a new public in the way. Okay. Meeting is now adjourned before 11 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you.